Swimmer's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Nimmer's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Okay, so hello, Natalie, and hello, Amy, and welcome to Nimmer's Netter.
Hi, Phil. Thanks for having us.
Hiya.
Absolute pleasure. Right, listener, this is the first time I've ever done an unscripted, improvised podcast. So this could be the future, or it could be something that we never repeat again. So the next half an hour to an hour, we'll tell you which way the podcast is going to go in the future. So before we do introductions, I'll just give you a bit of background. So this kind of came out of the fact that there's a Twitter space called Saturday Ed Chat, which I often attend with Dan Edwards, and it has Sinead Moxham, and it also has Kate Jones on there as well. And we're talking about behaviours and routines and consistency, particularly in the aspect of kind of response to pandemic and using kind of routines as part of your behaviour policy, but also, you know, to satisfy some of the criteria that we had to work under with the restrictions that we had. So that's kind of the preface for the conversation, but that's taken us into this great direction. We're going to be starting talking about maybe climate, curriculum, consistency, CPD with Natalie and with Amy. So before we get into that, I'll start with you, Amy. Will you just do the gentle introductory question? So we just tell listeners a little bit about yourself and kind of your journey to this point in education, please.
Sure, yeah. So I'm Amy. I am currently one regional education director for Academy Transformation Trust. And then from the 1st of September, I will be the deputy CEO of Coventry Multi Academy Trust. So I am a primary school teacher by trade, and then became a primary head, principal, executive principal, and then regional education director with our current trust, which is when I began to work with Natalie.
Fabulous. I'm Natalie Hawkins. I'm currently the principal at North Warsaw Primary Academy in Warsaw, and Amy is my boss. Prior to that, I worked as an assistant, as a vice principal at North Warsaw, and an assistant principal for another MAT, again, by trade and primary trained. I actually did a primary degree, actually a 4-year, where I specialised in Key Stage 2, 3, but then opted to go into Key Stage 2 overall. And I think I'm in my 11th year of teaching.
Excellent. Right. Thank you both. So in the spirit of this being improvised, we're going to start with kind of talking about the importance of consistency and routines around behaviour. So just to give you the kind of preface for what we were talking about on the Saturday Ed Chat. So one of the questions was around, you know, what kind of things we'd be doing over the summer to get yourself ready to come back to school, because we still don't know under what conditions may be operating. It looks as if we'll be kind of, he hesitates to say back to relative normality, although some schools will continue to use particular routines to kind of work within the COVID restrictions. However, one of the things that we talked about, and one of the things that I kind of highlighted, is how the school that I'm working at currently, we looked at routines, but not just to kind of respond to pandemic. We kind of looked to get in front of behaviour with particular routines. So some of the stuff that we did around routines, and obviously the many different types of routines, you know, Tom Bennett talks about routines in his book, Running the Room. Obviously, Doug Lamov talks about routines quite a lot on Teach Like a Champion. But we decided to use Tom Bennett's 5 D's model, which is design, describe, demonstrate, demand, and disengage. And we looked at designed sort of academic and social routines to kind of, you know, for want of a better phrase, get in front of behavior, but also, like I said, to have that kind of response to the pandemic. So we designed 7 academic routines that we do. So without going through all of them at the moment, I will just kind of talk about a couple of them. So we have a couple that we do, which one is called On Time to Shine, Dress to Impress, and Collect and Inspect. So those kind of routines, which we might get to later on, are around, you know, kind of starting the day. So we decided that we go for an outside lineup where students can come and stand on a particular marker, obviously undercover. You know, we're not monsters, listeners. Undercover if it was raining or anything like that. And then the teachers would come out to meet the class. They'd obviously meet and greet them, say good morning, see how they were, look at the uniform, make sure they're ready for the day, and then take them into the classroom where they would be having their first lesson. And at the end of the lesson, they would stand and deliver, which is for listeners of a certain age will want to sing that, and take them outside at the end of that lesson. So the purpose of kind of some of these routines were to kind of, like I said, get in front of behavior early on, but also to kind of mitigate those kind of restrictions that we had to work within. So rather than me just have a monologue here, I know this is something that Amy and Natalie have looked at as well, around sort of consistency and the curriculum for behaviour. So I don't know if I'm going to come to you first, Natalie, maybe, and just talk a little bit about what kind of things that you've done in North Walsall in this regard, and how you've kind of transformed those behaviour routines there.
Yeah, sure. So we placed ourselves, I think, in quite a good position a few years ago. When I first started at North Walsall as a school, we were not in a position where we were ready to learn, and our outcomes were supporting that notion. So we looked at using the Lemov techniques sort of from day one. I was trained in Lemov and had spent actually all of my teaching career using the techniques. So we started off with the basics, just sweating the small stuff, and we introduced a strategy at a time, and we did that over a 3-year period. So we began with silent corridors, because what was happening was we were seeing lots of fights and arguments in the corridors, and you know, that just wasn't setting anybody up for a good lesson. So we embedded the silent corridors to begin with, in order for transition to take place to and from lessons. And then we moved on to our next strategy, which is slant, which is how we expect the children to sit in a lesson and be ready to learn. And we embedded a number of routines over a 3-year period. So actually, when we came to the pandemic, we were already in an excellent position in terms of having to prepare ourselves for the new restrictions. So that limited contact that was happening in and around school was already embedded. We were already sitting in rows in class, particularly in Key Stage 2, not necessarily in Key Stage 1. And these were already consistently embedded. So when the restrictions came as a result of COVID, we had very, very minimal changes to make. We were already lining up. All we did was change the lining up outside the classroom door to outside on the playground in good weather. So actually, we were already in a consistent position. But it took us a 3-year cycle for all staff and pupils to be at that position where they could use the strategies on a daily basis to ensure that they were safe and ready to learn.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, isn't it? Because, like I said, we kind of came at it with that angle as well, that this is something that we were intending to change, or something that we were going to be looking at, and was part of maybe, you know, as you've talked rightly about there, Natalie, in terms of sort of a longer term journey. But because, you know, we had to make changes pretty quickly, we decided to kind of move forward on the plan. But you're absolutely right. And I don't know what your opinion on this, Amy, is, but you start questioning, you know, you've mentioned there, Natalie, about kind of silent corridors and transition times. And you do think about, why do we have, and I'm obviously in a secondary school, why did we have the routine of, you know, students move to the next lesson through the corridor? You just think, well, it's not particularly effective in the sense that, you know, they can quite often become distracted and go somewhere else and not find a way to lesson. And, you know, for senior staff, how long you've trying to be out on the corridors trying to sweep students in. You know, we did something which was, you know, fairly revolutionary, I suppose. We moved the lessons and we made sure we had 3 100-minute lessons with a transition between every single one. So it's a lot easier to do that. But you do start thinking about some of the things that were considered to be, you know, the way we do things, and actually, you know, were they beneficial, were they useful? And it's really interesting that you've said that.
For sure. And I think one of the things that it's encouraged us to do is to question all of the routines and norms that are just or have been default behaviours, default mindsets, default structures. And we're restricted in a way by the rhythm of the academic year, the rhythm of a school day and the ring of a school bell. But within that, I think it's shone a spotlight on the space that we've got to innovate. And if it works more effectively, there'll be routines that I'm sure they'll, you know, every school and academy across the country are going to take with them, having kind of had them forced upon us in a way over the last 12 to 18 months. But I think one of the things that Natalie and the team do really, really well at North Walsall is use all assessment information to make their choices. So not just kind of, you know, pupil performance, attainment, progress, etc., attendance, but actually, you know, like Natalie's just said there, almost the soft evidence, the anecdotal, where are things perhaps coming unstuck a little bit with behaviour and routines, and using that assessment information then to actually refine their practice, and having that curriculum mindset around the routines and the behaviours just as you would around the mapping of your maths curriculum, for example. But I think we are certainly in a situation now where we're having these conversations about kind of those, you know, things that we feel are in Tablet of Stone, and actually it's not. It's not, like you've just said.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, like I said, we used it, because I was privileged to speak to Tom Bennett this time last year when we were looking at trying to change these routines around, or maybe bring a few forward that we'd intended to do later on. And that 5D model I found really useful. So obviously you both described there about how you designed those routines. So you've talked about the silent corridors, you've talked about slant, you've talked about some of the T-like kind of strategies that you've used. But I guess the next bit I want to ask you about is, how did you kind of go about describing those? Because if they've been, and I think that Natalie used the word implement or implementation, which I'm hugely big on from work that I did with the research school previously. So just tell us a little bit about how you went about, obviously designing them, you've talked about, but then how you went about describing those to staff, to students, and kind of the wider school community.
Natalie, do you want to pick that up?
Yeah, absolutely. So to begin with, I started off leading PDMs. I did all the PDMs to begin with when I first started. And I just took a strategy at a time, and I shared the research and shared the chapter from the book. So it's not to overload staff with the pedagogy. I just took the one strand, took the one aspect from the book, and we used it during a PDM, and we read around the strategy, read how it was used, what it was useful for, and then we used all the clips. So if you've read Teach Like a Champion, it comes with clips. So we were able to discuss the new strategy we wanted to put in place, then watch a clip, and then have a go at ourselves, which is why it took a very long time to embed each new technique that we planned to use. So when we were looking at silent corridors, that was probably the quickest one we had, actually. That was probably the quickest one to embed. So in terms of staff, we decided on where we would stand and what we would say, and ensuring it was everybody's responsibility, the office staff, the lunchtime supervisors. We were all singing from the same hymn sheet. They'd all read the research behind what we were trying to implement. And we'd had the discussion as to why it was necessary. And some of the biggest feedback we were having from staff, obviously we're not a secondary school, so we don't transition in the same way. But for example, after break or before lunch, the children were getting into fights in the corridors or arguments, and then bringing that back into the classroom. And that was derailing the lesson start for at least 10 to 15 minutes. And that was happening two or three times a day. So we knew what we wanted, and we knew what the outcome needed to be and what the impact would be at the end. And I would say we did that. Silent corridors was embedded within a term. I'd say by Christmas, we nailed it. And in terms of the pupils, from day one, we had almost that sort of first week back in September was just purely routines, of which silent corridors were one. So to go with our silent corridors, we have walking hands to ensure that those hands didn't wander under someone else's neck or face. So it's hands behind your back, nice and smart, silent and the corridor. Nothing revolutionary is going to jump into someone's head down a corridor. The conversation is not necessary. And once we accepted that and staff understood why, it became a really easy process. You know, the pupils were on it straight away. They responded really well. And by Christmas, we'd done it. It was nailed. And then we just then decided on which aspect was the next biggest concern for us in terms of behaviour derailing learning. And we just took one aspect at a time.
And I think one of the things that's been really, really impactful, particularly with you and the team, Natalie, is that those mental models of excellence that you all share. So the language is codified around the expectations, the routines, and the rationale. And because that's really clear and you've taken real time to really deeply embed that, it then does become embedded and sustainable and not dependent or reliant on particular colleagues, particular leaders, or you kind of implementing that. It is absolutely a shared responsibility, much in the way that you would treat safeguarding. You know, everybody has a role to play, and we would never leave safeguarding to chance, and we never leave behaviour to chance.
Yeah, and I think it was difficult to begin with. I personally took a bit of criticism from parents in this particular stance that we took on silent corridors, in terms of, was it too military? Were we expecting a certain expectation that shouldn't be expected of primary school children? Well, absolutely not. And then what we were able to do was to share the actual evidence with parents afterwards to say, well, actually, since we've implemented this, we've seen this percentage less of incidences happening to and from lessons. We've seen a reduction in orange or red cards because of this transitional period. And the evidence speaks for itself. And actually, after a while, again, I'd probably say it took the parents a little bit longer than a term to get on board with it, but it is now just a given. And the parents understand why we do it and what the expectation is. And they're fully on board with it as well now.
They're such good points. And I mean, if anyone could see me now, I feel like standing up and applauding. And I know that obviously the listener base that we've got now is quite a broad range of people. So you'll have lots of people who will be kind of 100% behind what we're both kind of, or what we're all talking about here. But then you have other people who will be talking about, you know, and you see it on the binary conversations that we have on Twitter and things like that around silent corridors. But I think what you've said there about how you've carefully implemented it, had a rationale for it, clearly explained it, communicated it, and then seen the benefits of it. It's not from an ideological standpoint that you wanting to control students or pupils' behaviour. It's around reducing the instances of poor behaviour, you know, making a much more calm environment and making it easier for students to learn in school. So, I mean, you know, I fully agree with that. I mean, what the one thing I was going to say in terms of, you know, you've really carefully implemented it. We kind of, and I'll take the blame for this, threw 7 routines out at the beginning of 1 year, which in the normal circumstances we would not have done, but obviously in the circumstances in which we had to work, you know, we did that pretty quickly. So we had the 7 I've said before. We had On Time to Shine, Dressed to Impress, Collect and Inspect, Left is Best. We had Star, which we called after the school, but it's the same as yours for TLAC. Hands Up, Hush Up, which we used as well, but I'll explain more later, and then Stand and Deliver. And the reason I'm mentioning these now is because we talked about that section about demonstrate, and it's just so interesting what you were talking about there, Natalie, in terms of, you know, the way that you did that. We didn't have the luxury of that. So I spoke to Tom Bennett probably around early August last year, and then we had to put these in place before they came back in September. So what I did, and I'm not advising that everyone goes out and does this, I use my own children as a guinea pig on this. And I know, I mean, as Tom Bennett said in the podcast, you know, you monster, taking your own children in and lining them up outside. I've only got 2, so it wasn't a difficult line. But we went outside and kind of practiced how to stand on the markers, how I, as the teacher, would come down the line, albeit a very small line, look at the uniform. I did dress them in our school uniform. Very smart they looked too. And then kind of looked at, right, this is where year 7 lineup, this is where year 8 lineup, 9, 10, 11, etc. This is how I would expect a lineup to look. This is how I would expect a teacher to go up and down the line and check the uniform and say good morning, you know, because we're all about positive relationships as well. And then we kind of sent that video out, obviously, you know, as well. And if anyone's concerned about any sharing of private information there, I am also the DSL. So, you know, these were my children lining up in a safe, controlled environment. There was no safeguarding issues there. And obviously we then shared that with the teachers. And then we did a different video once the students came back and kind of got in front of it, because as you'll both know, you can't practice a lineup and one look at the fire drill before kind of COVID will tell you that. You can't practice an outside lineup with 800 students because it just won't work and it'll be chaotic and people will lose a lot of faith in it straight away. So we kind of did that, stood them on the markers, practiced it on the inset days, and then kind of constantly practiced it after that. So that kind of demonstrate was really, really powerful. Now I'm meandering around to the next question, but obviously when you've kind of done that and you've demonstrated it and everyone's kind of got the buy-in, and you talked about, you know, the parents having the buy-in, students having the buy-in, seeing the benefits, how do you then go about the next of the D's, which is demanding that? And I think one phrase that you've put kind of on the notes here, which I thought this is just brilliant, is you've put here, if you let me off, you let me down. I say that all the time. If I let you off, I let you down. And death by 1,000 cuts. I just thought that is so kind of, it's absolutely true, isn't it? You know, and especially in your roles as kind of head teachers and things like that. And my role as kind of the deputy in charge of behaviour on the ground, you can't have a minute off or a day off at all. So how did you go about demanding that those routines are followed? I know it sounds quite a strong word, but obviously it's important to make sure that
it is important. And I think it's really important to be really open, transparent and explicit about that expectation from the very beginning, because a little bit like you would with, you know, teaching the behaviour curriculum to your class, actually colleagues have got to be really clear about what is expected of them. So I think it's around leading by example, first and foremost, but also that absolute clarity. But by modelling it and naming it and making it absolutely explicit, I think you are empowering people to be successful. And I think when we talk about relationships in general, whether it's with colleagues or with our children and young people, that whole, if you let me off, you let me down. Actually, if you say there is a consequence and then you don't implement that consequence, that is a breach of trust in itself, because it might be that the consistency that's needed for that relationship actually means you need to implement that consequence, or you need to have that expectation of me unwaveringly. I'll come to Natalie for the specifics for North Warsaw, but Natalie's academy is particularly high proportion of children with additional needs. So it's not to say that there aren't reasonable adjustments, but it's also to say that there are unwaveringly high expectations in order to ensure access and inclusion for everybody. Natalie, I don't know if you want to add to that for your specifics.
Yeah, I think in terms of ensuring it happened all the time, it was twofold. It came in two parts. And the first was to empower the staff, and by the staff, I mean all staff. Because if I had a penny for every time I heard the sentence, "If Miss Hawkins sees you doing that," I think I was about to kill one of the teachers, I think. And I had to really sort of go back to basics with the staff and really empower them in terms of, we are all equal. Everybody's voice is just as important as the other person's. And if it's a lunchtime supervisor insisting on silent corridors, that's no different than myself standing in the corridor doing it. And that took a while, that mindset change. So there was that to deal with to begin with, and that happened in a number of different ways. But then at the same time, there was that, I am going to hold you to account. Are you aware it's part of your teacher standards and the teaching assistant standards to manage effective behaviour within the school? So where actually, you know, on the odd occasion I did see that sort of break in consistency from the odd member of staff, it was a more fierce conversation, a very blunt one that needed to take place in terms of, are you aware you are not meeting your teacher standard by not addressing this? That kind of nipped it in the bud pretty early on, and that sort of didn't become an issue anymore. And now I'm confident that there isn't a member of staff at all in the building that wouldn't hold each and every pupil to the same standard in terms of, if we just take the silent corridors and the walking hands, for example. I could pretty much guarantee that if I had a camera spying on staff, that I would pick up every single member of the team addressing this when it happened.
Yeah, it's so important. And I mean, in terms of the kind of routines that I've talked about, I've only kind of been explicit about a couple of those, but the collect and inspect routine, which is obviously taking place at the beginning of school, break time, end of lunchtime, and then we did it at the end of the day, which actually I'll come to later, became an absolutely joyous thing that, I mean, it's hard to believe that the students would end up staying behind about 10 minutes after the bell had gone because they're waiting for the rewards and the hot chocolate Fridays and whatever else it was at the end of the day. They actually voluntarily stay in lines for longer than the school day. I mean, I was there tapping my watch at 2:55, thinking, why is nobody leaving the school? But we'll come to that in a minute. But in terms of what you're saying there, and it's absolutely right, you know, we initially set the tone for that. So obviously senior staff were out there, and we newly appointed heads of year, which we didn't have previously. I've got very strong feelings on the importance of heads of year in secondary school, but obviously people may disagree. And they kind of led those lineups from the front to start with. But then obviously then, exactly as you said then, it wasn't a case of, oh, let's see if head of year 8 is going to be there or not. The teachers then started to feel, well, I understand how to operate within this routine. I understand that I've got responsibility for these students in here, and I can go up and down the line inspecting, collecting and sorting out. But also as well, and you talked about those challenging conversations, in a way it was almost self-regulating because it was so public. So if you were the teacher, and I mean, God, you know, God listeners, it's been me numerous times, you know, and it probably still is, my year 11 class will attest to this, if I was the last one coming down and every, you know, 750 students are standing outside and there's one line with no teacher there, you kind of feel pretty embarrassed when you're the one that gets down there. So it became kind of self-regulating, that it was like, well, if I'm not there on time and my class are out of line, I'm letting the rest of the team down, never mind the students. So it became like, well, I don't want to be that one person that's doing that. I want to be a team player. And it was amazing how quickly everybody adjusted to that. You know, previously, and like I said, I'm not blaming anybody else. I've done this before. You know, I was possibly the teacher that was the last one out the staff room and my class were at the door. I was a teacher that was wandering down the corridor with the books under one arm and, you know, my class are playing havoc down in the bottom end of the corridor in the science labs. But what this routine did is it made it a lot easier for everyone to exist within that. And it did become kind of a little bit self-regulating as well.
And also colleagues see the impact of it. And actually then it becomes where initially you may have those thought processes and you're planning for change around that initial engagement and buy-in. Like you say, not only does it become self-regulating, actually it becomes embedded because the impact becomes tangible and it helps colleagues, you know, with their own day-to-day work, because lessons will start more smoothly, for example, because those routines are already firmly in place and established. There are less behaviour incidents. So everybody's a winner. And because people can see and feel that, and all of a sudden it's becoming tangible for everybody in their own role, as well as for the children, then I think that has a kind of a domino effect as well, in terms of where you might have individuals that either forget or whatever it might be, Bill, a last out or whatever. Actually, that in itself helps with that as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. It does. And I mean, there's nothing to stop. And people that potentially would kind of come out and voice, you know, against these kind of ideas and would say, oh, you know, you're kind of creating conformity, you're making students behave in a certain way. Well, yes, but that's because obviously that's going to help the calmness in the classroom. But also, you know, we used it really positively as well. You know, we didn't have teachers barking at children up and down the lines. It was more a case of, oh, good morning, how are you? What did you do this weekend? It was those kind of, it's called collect and inspect, or stand and deliver. It was around, well, have those conversations, celebrate how well they've done in the lesson. You know, have a conversation about what kind of things they've done. You can do all of that because you're having those kind of opportunities, which perhaps you wouldn't have got if you were rushing from classroom to classroom and standing at the door. So, you know, it's kind of really powerful to do that as well.
Yeah, and I think it's around that, you know, like you say, it's not about being controlling, but it is about being in control. You know, and Tom Bennett says, doesn't he always be the adult? You know, and there's a responsibility on us, to our children and young people, to really, really control that for them, because that is what they need to be successful. And it's the same with colleagues, you know, in order to operate successfully and to complete their job to the you know, the best of their ability, they're really key, those routines. And I think you've kind of, the conversations in the staff room, Natalie, I think would support that, wouldn't they, over the last, like you say, you've had the ability to do this gradually rather than in response at pace.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you said it there, it wasn't about controlling the pupils. It was about the fact the pupils couldn't control themselves. That was what initiated the beginning of it. It's they couldn't self-regulate, they were unable to, which means we had to put a set of routines in place to support them. What those routines have done is now allowed them to self-regulate. They know what needs to happen and they are regulating that themselves. You get the odd one that will speak in the corridor and it's addressed immediately. But the vast majority of the time now, they are self-regulating, but that couldn't have happened had we not have put the measures in place to begin with. So it's not about us being controlling. It's about, to begin with, they couldn't control themselves. So actually what it's done is taught them a skill to how to self-regulate this aspect of their own behaviour.
And I don't know how you found it, Natalie, in terms of, I mean, something else you've put in here about not having certainly not a classroom lottery in terms of consistency, and some reflections that we've had from the new staff that have come into school. And traditionally, you know, we've had reasonably numbers of new staff coming in. This year, we've had less new staff than ever. But those new staff have kind of talked about how much easier it is to operate within these kind of routines, because you know that this is happening in the corridor next door, sorry, in the classroom next door, it's happening in the corridor below, it's happening every single place, and it makes it a lot easier. So have you had that kind of reflections and those kind of discussions happened in your staff room as well?
Yeah, we've had two new ladies join us, two new teachers, an NQT and a teacher who's come from a completely different borough, and they both joined us during the pandemic. And of course, for the teacher who'd taught before, she was in the second year of teaching, she said she'd never seen anything like it. She said it's so different to the environment she'd taught in previously. And she commented on how the pupils just do it. That was her. She said they just do it. I don't have to ask them. They just do it automatically. And for her, that was a thing. She couldn't understand how that was happening because she hadn't come from that environment. So for her, she was trying to wrap her head around, well, why are these pupils just doing this without being asked to do it? So for her, that was a big change. And then for our NQT, I think she talked about how the pupils are really responsive, but I don't think she really understands just yet, because we're her first school, actually what an achievement it is for the pupils to do these kind of things and how it sets her as a teacher off on the right foot, because you can't underestimate when a class isn't doing what they need to do, which then allows you to teach. Actually, that burden has been taken away from her. And obviously a lot of the routines that we haven't talked about yet that we do in the classroom enable her to just teach and not have to sweat that small stuff to begin with.
Yeah, definitely. And we will talk about those classroom routines in a minute. And I guess one more thing, and this is a kind of a podcast for people that are thinking about whether they continue with some of the routines that they've been doing. And another thing that we kind of tacked onto this, and, you know, again, I'm going to sound like, you know, the behavior monster again, aren't I, by talking about detentions, things like that. But we moved to a same day detention model, which were then collected from the lineups at the end of the day, and they were kept within those year group bubbles to make it a lot easier. But I mean, in terms of, I'm not saying that as obviously we want to go around being extremely punitive, but it made it easier to kind of reinforce, and we're talking about that demand section, you know, if there was a serious breach of one of those routines and there's a serious issue of behavior, unfortunately there were few and far between, that will be collected on the same day, that will be addressed on the same day, and there will be a restorative conversation following on that, and then it goes again the next day, rather than kind of some of the other convoluted and complicated detention systems that perhaps we had previously, which was, you know, a teacher will set one, but they can't set one on a Tuesday because that's a different department and they go to that room on that day, or that club's taking place on there and I have to collect them, and what if they don't turn up, do they then go in this room? It was really, really simple. Right, if you've had this kind of referral on that day, this results in a detention, you'll be collected from line up at the end of the day and taken to this room. And it was just dead simple routines that kind of worked within this kind of bigger structure as well.
Yeah, and I think if you think you're a monster in terms of punitive, we're a primary school and I introduced detentions, after school detentions, nearly 3 years ago. And for primary schools, that's unheard of. Obviously, through the pandemic, we slightly changed it to adapt to the need, and we've moved to a centralised detention, whereby the SLT team are the only members of the staffing body to have the detentions. They hold them. We've each got a day of the week, so there's no one day of the week, like you say, where it's you can't have one on this day, because we take it in turns on who of us will take the detentions on that day. They've moved from after school to during the day, obviously due to COVID restrictions, and that's worked absolutely fine. So we have made some adjustments. But again, like you say, it's important. If they've done something that warrants that stronger sanction, then it needs to take place, even at a primary level. Because by doing it at a primary level, we're setting them up for secondary. That transition's happening from quite an early age. Obviously, we have a slightly different system for our much younger children, our early years and key stage one. But detentions do happen. They are centralised. They are regulated by the SLT, so the same expectations take place. And what we're doing is we're setting that secondary transition up from year three upwards.
Yeah, great. And I mean, everybody, and again, there will be people that will be disagreeing, and that's healthy and that's good and that's fine. And that's why we're here, to kind of have those debates. But for everyone that says, well, that's not particularly a good idea, or I don't approve of that, or you shouldn't be doing that, you know, like you said before, you know, speaking to your pupils, speaking to your staff, I mean, we've done a lot of kind of research around student council. Student Voice has been extremely strongly behind a lot of the routines and kind of, you know, particularly the same day detentions, because they've seen the impact that has had. They've seen the impact that has had. And, you know, we're not, again, you know, we're still invested in things like restorative practice. We're still having a conversation about that and trying to address that moving forward. But it has made a big difference in terms of the climate of the school and how students understand what the parameters are they need to work within. And it's made it a lot, lot better for the students and, you know, and for the staff as well. Right, let's get on to talk about in the class. Now, this is the bit that we haven't yet done. So this is where I'm glad I've got you both here in terms of expertise, because as you noticed, seven routines that we talked about were predominantly kind of organisational around the school, and something that I'm going to kind of focus on a lot more. And I'm dead excited, as I'm sure you both are, that Teach Like a Champion 3.0 is coming out on August the 10th. Already in the Amazon basket,
and ordered. I'm pre-order.
I'll be pestering Doug to come back on and have a conversation with me about it. I'm already pestering enough as it is, but I'm sure that he will. But just talk to us a little bit about kind of how you've gone about teaching behavior in the school, and what kind of in-class routines you've taken from TLAC and how you've kind of implemented those.
Yeah, I think to begin with, as opposed to a behaviour, we had a climate change. So we addressed quite early on the physical climate for learning within the room. And we looked at a lot of research around temperature, what kind of temperature you should have in a room in order for learning to really take place, airflow within the room, clutter. You know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that in a cluttered room, pupils will mimic that kind of clutter in their own work. So where work is being produced and it's not to standard, is that because their physical environment is demonstrating a cluttered, not so tidy space? So I did a lot of work with staff over a 12-month period where we'd have climate for learning checklists, which were physical climate for learning. So how was the classroom set up? Desks facing forward, nothing on the, you know, declutter the teacher's desk, nothing on the top of cupboards, bookshelves nice and tidy, at least one window open in every room to have that air circulation, that airflow. So we really sweat the small stuff in terms of the physical climate to begin with. And then we addressed how the pupils were entering the room, that transition. So we just started to embed transition whereby we meet the children at the door. We would shake hands and make eye contact and have that good morning, how's your day been, how's your weekend been, etc. We obviously put a hold on that during the pandemic because obviously that no physical contact and the 2 meter rule. So that's something we're looking to pick back up again come September. But that physical climate had a massive impact. And if I'm honest, I think the biggest impact was on the staff, not on the pupils to begin with. They became far more productive. We'd done a survey with them prior to implementing the climate checks. And then we did one after a term, then after two terms, then at the end of the academic year. And the feedback from the staff was phenomenal. How they felt more prepared for lessons, how they felt that everything was calmer, they were calmer, the pupils responded better, the pupils' desks were tidier, they'd noticed less fidgeting. And this was purely through a physical climate change.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, like I said, I mean, I keep reflecting on this. We have previously, I mean, in the previous role, I was the professional mentor. I used to do Teach Like a Champion. We used to be the person that did the kind of the training with new staff around the videos and the number of times that I've watched those Teach Like a Champion videos. But I've kind of stepped away from that a little bit more and kind of focused and concentrated on, you know, which are two big roles, the DSL role and the behavior role. But actually, you're right, in terms of that physical climate and those clear high expectations, it's really important that you get that right in the classroom as well.
Also, Phil, I think the relationships in North Warsaw Primary Academy are tangible. Those children are loved and nurtured and supported, and they know it. And that's all part of that physical climate, that, you know, those routines on entry to classrooms. There is a tangible, positive, nurturing relationship in every classroom and corridor. And that goes hand in hand with those unwavering high expectations and the absolute certainty around all of the rules and routines.
Listen, that's such a good point, Amy. I mean, you know, obviously, again, you know, you're going to get, and I feel like I'm overemphasizing the point that people are going to disagree. There's obviously going to be a lot of people who are going to agree with this. But what you're saying there about those unwavering high expectations, but also the quality of the relationships, is something that we could echo in terms of our school. So, you know, we're you know, a 74, 75% people premium school. So we're right in the center of Blackpool. Everybody knows about, you know, how good a place Blackpool is, obviously, especially in the summer, but obviously it has its challenges as well. So, you know, we understand the kind of community that we're serving. So we have, you know, a really high number of EHCPs, for example. We have lots of students that are classified, you know, SEND. We have 5 nurture classes across our school. So we have, you know, students that, you know, have bespoke curriculums, work within kind of nurture classrooms, but everybody gets on board with those routines and the way that we do things around here. And it's not a kind of, you know, if you have high expectations, clear routines, all those kind of things, well, you can't be, as you said there, you can't have good quality relationships, you can't be a kind, considerate, caring, restorative, relational school. You can do both, can't you?
You can. Yeah. And I think, you know, we're talking about TLAC 3 coming out. And I think the latest little excerpt was dangled in front of everybody yesterday, because what Doug Lamov's kindly doing is blogging little chunks at a time. And I was reading yesterday's, and he'd written in there, which I think really encapsulates this really powerfully, that he says the magic is in the correlation in being the person who says, I believe in you and I care about you, and therefore I will not accept anything but your best. And that is rooted in that love and that care and that nurture and support. And I think the context of North Warsaw, Natalie, you know, you've got a high proportion of SEND pupils. You've got that really, really important, impactful nurture group, which is, you know, it's fluid. Children can come in and out of that, again, rooted in your diagnostic assessment. But I think that's a really important point to make, because colleagues will disagree perhaps with some of this. And that's not to say, you know, that everything works everywhere, because it doesn't. But I can certainly say it absolutely works for these children in this context.
Yeah, and I think every strategy we put in place, whether it's inside the classroom or not, is a strategy that sets the children up for later life. It's there are expectations that have to be met in life, where, you know, a sense of leeway will not be given. As such, you need to prepare yourself and you know, embed those skills early on to meet expectations that are put in front of you, regardless of what the expectation is. Are you going to be able to meet that standard? Well, the answer should be yes. And as long as you're setting them up with the skills to do that, no matter what they get put in front of them, whether it's at secondary school, college, university, in their work life when they're older, they will raise the bar to meet that standard. And that's because they've embedded it at such a young age.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last of the five Ds, if you like, is disengage. So, I mean, I spoke to Tom Bennett about this, and obviously you've had, as I said earlier on, the benefit of the time to implement this carefully. But then, and you said it's something really powerful earlier on in terms of, you know, a lot of the students or a lot of the teachers were saying, you know, oh, what if Miss comes along? What are we going to do then? You know, where they needed the ownership of it themselves. And we had a consultant that came in and worked with us. He came in periodically, and he just said something at SLT that kind of really rung true with us. And he said, you put all these routines in, staff are really behind it, students speak very highly of it, you know, and he'd spoken to some of the parents as well who were really kind of supportive of it. But he said, what if you didn't run around as much as you all do? What if you had, and he coined this phrase, which we've used periodically, what if you had a tea and biscuits moment where you kind of sat in the office at break time? What would happen? And, you know, it was kind of interesting, and we've made us reflect on that a little bit about, could these routines run without us being there? And I'm not one of those, hesitates to say, leaders that demands that I do everything. It demands that I be at the front and be the kind of, right, you must do this and follow me. And I'm kind of, maybe I'm not charismatic enough to carry that off. Although I have tried at previous jobs when I was head of year. But I kind of think about, right, it needs to be a system that everybody understands, everybody buys into, and it's kind of future-proofed as well. Because if I'm not there tomorrow, it should still happen. It shouldn't
be. Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, when you talk about impact, I think that's one of the real key indicators, isn't it? Is when something is so deeply embedded that it isn't reliant on the leader or any individual for that matter. But that actually it has become such a part of the fabric of the environment that it's become self-sustainable. And I think, Natalie, if you're honest, it's taken a while, but I think you can now, at any given moment, really have a tea and biscuits moment if you chose to do so, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. And I'll be honest, that's been the hardest battle, the longest one to fight, I think, over the last 4 years, has not been with the pupils coming to terms with the new strategies and embedding them. It's been with the staff implementing them consistently, so that I can have a cup of coffee and a bourbon. And we are kind of at that point. We're doing a lot of work this academic year on metacognition. And part of our CPD this year was for every single member of staff, including my office staff and the site supervisor, to read Running the Room, which everybody has read now. Every single member of staff had a copy that was bought for them. They've read it. And the idea was that they could use the Running the Room to reflect on the Lamov techniques that we've been embedding over the past 3 to 4 years, draw those correlations for us to then move on to that new sort of science, really, particularly for a lot of our staff, of the metacognition, so that they are aware of how systems work, why they work, and that I don't need to be there for this to happen. So I probably took a step aside, I'd say, quite a while ago now, and I kind of handed over to various members of staff in terms of who would lead on what. We appointed a behaviour lead who was a teacher, and a deputy behaviour lead, more importantly, who was a teaching assistant, which was, again, in not many schools do you have teaching assistants that lead on such significant roles. If it's a new technique, I do very much lead from the front, but then I step aside and I make it very clear, you know, I've done the legwork for you. I've led you to water. It's now your turn to drink, because I'm not going to do that for you, but I am going to hold you to account if you don't do it. And it just kind of happens now. I don't know how it's happened, but it has. So it will take a little while for me to embed, monitor, model, and then I kind of let them run with it, and I kind of leave them, really, and I say, well, it's yours now. It's yours to lose, so don't lose it.
But I think as well, Natalie, if you go back to what we know works brilliantly in terms of teaching and learning and the curriculum, you know, you'd model, you'd use the worked example, you'd then fade aspects of that worked example away, you'd then, you know, look at that independence and ability to do that without the guidance. And I think it's just the same mental model, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I think teaching a group of adults in many respects is no different to teaching a group of pupils. You're all learning a new strategy or technique for the first time. You're all playing around with it. You're all making mistakes with it. You then master it. And I think that's the approach. In fact, that's probably the word I'd use, actually. The mastery approach. We use a mastery approach in maths. We use it in reading. We use a mastery approach in behaviour. You will all master behaviour for yourself. You will all become self-regulated and you will all achieve better for it.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, just on a practical level as well, in terms of the routines that we've been talking about. And one thing that we found is that obviously, you know, staff absence through nobody's fault, you know, because of being tracked and traced or pinged or whatever it would be, you know, we've seen a lot of staff having to be going off for various lengths of time. So something that has become really apparent is that, and this is going to sound horrible and this is not meant to, there's not as big an impact. Whereas I can remember, you know, 18 months ago, you know, if the head of year, particularly the head of year 11, let's say, was off, it would be, what are we going to do now? Because they were the go-to person. They were the person with a superhero cape that sorted out all issues. So whatever it was, they'd just know that you can go to the head of year 11 and they'll sort it out. Now, without being in any way disrespectful, that the head of year 11 has still retained that superb, you know, superhero persona, but it's within the kind of regulations of the routines that we're using. So if the person at the front of the lineups isn't that head of year 11, it doesn't matter. It could actually be anybody because everybody knows how to do it. And any time that we've had supply teachers or cover teachers or whatever it's been come in there, it's very, very easy. You know, obviously those were the lessons, and maybe it's the same at primary. I mean, I did spend quite a lot of time primary in the previous job. But, you know, if you have somebody coming in that's covering the lesson, in whatever year group it might be, it did cause a lot of disruption. Now, we found that to be less, one, because it's very easy to understand the routines, two, because like you said, you've got those classroom routines embedded and people know what to do, and the students are just a lot more settled. So it's kind of had a good impact as well in terms of consistency and whatever comes, and goodness knows you two must be the same. You know, there's days when you think, what more could be thrown at us? You know, you've had weather, you've had bubble sent home, you've had X number of staff at home, and you just kind of get on with it, don't you? But the routines do help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I have no issues. We run a very, very different model now, which means we don't have to use cover staff or supply teachers. Any cover that is needed is done by an SLT member. But I have no issues. Like you said, we've had a few pings just before we broke up, actually. I had no problems. I didn't even break a sweat over the thought it might need to be two of my level three teaching assistants that took that class for the next couple of days. Not for a second did I think in my mind, are they going to manage the behaviour or anything within the room? It wasn't even a consideration. And it's one thing I don't lose sleepless nights over anymore, which is a big thing, really, I think, for a principal to be able to say that they're not going to worry about that. But more importantly, when I checked in with those members of staff and I said, you know, how are you feeling? 2 days, you know, can you manage it? Everything all right? Have you got what you need? Any concerns? No, we're good to go. We've got it. Don't worry. Mm. And that's just what I needed to hear.
Yeah.
And that's only because they know that they're going to be able to do their job, which is the teaching and learning, because the students are going to do their job, so to speak, which is to be ready to learn.
Absolutely. And in terms of the kind of continuous improvement, and obviously you've got that culture, both of you within the Academy Trust, within the schools, about that constant assessing and refining, and I guess a tea and biscuits moment would help to do that. So, I mean, one thing that we're maybe looking at is, you talked earlier about the centralised detention system, and obviously it works really well. In our case, yours was the SLT picks up, ours is the heads of year pick up. But one thing that we maybe looked at is, and obviously we do read Running the Room as well, is around, is it, and I'm not saying this for our school, but just as a general open question, is it too easy to pass that behaviour on? And would one of the assess and refine things maybe look at some more of the teaching staff perhaps taking those detentions, or, you know, is that something that you're going to look at in terms of continuous improvement?
I think for us personally at North Water at the moment, no. And that's because my teachers have enough to do. They're too busy. Me adding detentions onto them is just one more thing that they don't have to do. Mm-hmm. And due to the new structure that we have, the internal structure, I've really freed up my SLT team to just do their core business, which is improving the school. and taking things off the teacher's hands that they don't necessarily need to do. So as an SLT, between myself, my two assistant principals, and my fourth member of the SLT team, we are more than able, capacity-wise, to deal with centralised detentions. And actually, a centralised detention consists of, you know, some work that they need to complete and that restorative conversation. That can be done by us. My teachers need to be able to concentrate on obviously dealing with behaviour during the lessons, but also teaching and learning. That's what they're there for. I don't think they need the added pressure. Could they do it? Yes. Do they need to? No.
No. Good. It's a good, interesting reflection. So in terms of assess and refine for the routines that you're talking about then, so what kind of things are you maybe reading about now? What kind of things are you looking at changing or tweaking for next year? And is there any suggestions in terms of recommended reads that you'd want to share with listeners?
In terms of reading, Phil, we looked, Natty's very keen, and I know she'll talk about this for North Walsall in a second, to explore now, moving on to metacognition a little bit more. So we obviously read Running the Room. Natalie's used that as that kind of to codify that what excellence looks like across her academy. And then we've then started to explore Jennifer Webb's Metacognition Handbook.
Yep.
Which we're finding really, really enlightening. And it's really good to see those examples in practice. And we were lucky enough to remote into her book launch as well. So that would be a recommended read for me. And also the EEF guidance around that. I think is it Alex Quigley?
It certainly is, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. So there's some great stuff in there. And actually, it's right up there. Is it second in the tool, in the recommended, you know, in the best bets in terms of improving standards? So I think there's some of the things that, broadly speaking, we'll be dipping into. But then Natalie, I'm sure, will talk about the specific kind of next steps for her in North Warsaw.
Yeah, yeah. Just to echo what you said, Amy, in terms of the reading, I've just read the Metacognition Handbook. It's only a small book, and as in true fashion, my SLT team have got it as their autumn read. So I've got enough coffees. My poor SLT team, they do get a lot of reading from me. So their autumn read is going to be the Metacognition Handbook. And for my two assistant principals, they've also got an autumn spring read, which is the Fierce Conversations with Susan Scott. And that's just to help them develop in having those conversations. They're quite new SLT, quite young in terms of their experience in that role. And that's a book that they're going to be having a read through to support them through those conversations, those challenging conversations that might need to happen. So they're the two I'd probably say at the moment that we're going to be dipping into over the next sort of term to two terms. And in terms of us at North Walsall, I did mention we'd looked at transition threshold, which is where the pupils come in and you greet them, you know, that shaking hands, making eye contact, getting a feel for how they're coming into the classroom. We are high pupil premium. We do have a significantly high number of SEND pupils. And to gauge that general feel upon entry is really important for us. So that's something we're going to reintroduce in September. We'll be revisiting each of our techniques that we've already got in place. So we've got slant, no uptake, cold call. We're going to revisit all of those. One that we dipped into right before lockdown, and obviously we had to put a hold on it, was strong voice. And that's something I'm going to revisit with all the staff in terms of we still have the odd member of staff that you hear shout every now and again. So we're going to really look at using that strong voice in how to command a room where needs been, how to really sort of demand high expectations from the pupils in that strong stance, which will also teach the pupils how to do it themselves. So our two techniques that we're going to be focusing on in the autumn term are threshold for the transition and strong voice.
Brilliant. And in terms of recommended reads, so you've talked about tea, like you talked about Running the Room. Obviously, you've kind of alluded to Rose and Shine in terms of the way that do things, and obviously Tom Sherrington and Ollie Cav's walkthroughs as well. But a good mention on the kind of notes that we put together before we talked about this unscripted podcast, listener, was Beyond Wiping Noses, which is one of my favourites, actually. That's Sputnik Steve, isn't it?
I was just going to say, Phil, can I chuck another one in there? Because I think somebody responded to one of my tweets not too long back, when I talked about that we'd used, I think it was Running the Room and Beyond Wiping Noses. And there was a bit of a, well, how can you use both of those? Like they're not really, you know, they're not really, don't go hand in hand. But I think actually there are common denominators. You know, we talk about certainty. We talk about relationships and trust. We talk about a deliberate planning and curriculum around these kind of things. I think that is a great book, and I've put that in the hands of an awful lot of colleagues with that whole curriculum mindset. Actually, some of Natalie's team at North Warsaw not too long back when we were sat in a safeguarding and a pastoral meeting. So I think you don't want to be ever be closed. You know, it's always good to be outward facing, to be open minded, but actually to not get caught up in the noise sometimes around some of this, and to actually just take a step back and think, right, what works for these children and young people and colleagues? What do we need? But yeah, I really, really love Beyond Wiping Noses. I think it's a fantastic book.
Well, you're so right, Amy, in terms of, I mean, obviously you're speaking to the person who's managed to interview both Tom Bennett and Paul Dick and still not be blocked by either of them. So I'm doing very well. And I'm occasionally, you know, moonlighting on Teacher Hub Radio whilst also having an involvement in a lot of kind of research and evidence stuff. I'm not suggesting that they don't, but, you know, I try to kind of hold a middle ground. And that doesn't mean that I don't have opinions on things, but what you just said then is absolutely right. The people that are working in certain schools will understand the need to read widely on all these different areas and employ which bits you can. And, you know, when I get asked to go and do a talk, which is very rare, by the way, the one I do is called Behaviour, Ideology, Evidence and Pragmatism. And it's around, well, there's actually a lot of consistencies across the EES guidance report, across, you know, running the room, across when the adults change or after the adults change. There's a lot of things that are very similar. And, you know, you don't get the full perspective on, you know, the characters on Twitter. You just get the kind of the broad brush headlines. But we are a school that uses running the room, but we also use when the adults change. You know, we are a school that can use, like I said, Beyond Wiping Noses and, you know, Rose and Shine and whatever else it is as well. You know, we try to take the best of all these different things. And like you said, working for your kids, your teachers in your context, I don't think we should be closed and ideological about kind of, well, particularly about behaviour.
No, absolutely not. And I think, you know, another big strength at Natalie's Academy is that the masses of work and training around being attachment aware and trauma aware and all the practice that sits alongside that, you know, and you've talked about those restorative conversations, which are so, so vital, but also understanding, you know, the attachment awareness side of things. So I think we can sometimes get, listen, on Twitter, right, you have to do it in a limited number of characters, and unless you want to do a great big massive thread, sometimes it's so hard to maintain some clarity around that. But it's vital to be wide read, because I think we're always going to encounter contexts that are new, children with needs that perhaps we've not experienced meeting before. So it's really important, I think, to keep that openness.
Yeah, definitely.
And I agree. Yes. Yeah, and I think that's something we've worked a lot on over the last few years is to ensure that all of the staff at North Warsaw are widely read, but also not overly read, because I am aware that not everyone wants to read every 5 minutes of the day. So I choose the texts very carefully that I share with them. So I'll read as many as possible, and I'll pick deliberately which texts I'm going to share whole school, like Running the Room and the Metacognition Handbook. Everyone will read those. And then I select very specific ones for certain members of staff. You know, my SLT team, the Fierce Conversations, as I've mentioned, that's a must read for them. I know their development needs. This is what they need to read. I had a certain member of staff who perhaps wasn't the most functional member of the team. So I gave him a book on, you know, the seven dysfunctions of a team to read, and told them to come back and share their reflections afterwards. But it's important that you take lots of different things in order to build your own model.
Brilliant. Right. Okay. So our first unscripted Nailers Natter, I think, has been a huge success. I don't know what the listener thinks, but it seems to have been really, really good and something we might go with in the future. Before we go, if you can just do a little bit of signposting. So obviously listeners who are finding out a bit more about you two today might want to find out more about you via social media or any blogs or things that you've written, or maybe even more about you know, the Academy Trust and about the schools. So Amy, do you want to do some signposting first about where listeners can find out more about you?
Yeah, so currently my Twitter handle is ATT Red PW, Regional Education Director, Primary West. I expect I will need to change that rather soon, given that I'm starting a new role on the 1st of September. So I'll be posting about that. So at the moment, Academy Transformation Trust, ATT, And then from September, I'll be the Deputy CEO at the Diocese of Coventry Multi Academy Trust. No blogs or anything like that. Just absolutely love reading everybody else's and you know, commenting on all the things that we learn and steal from each other.
Fantastic. And Natalie?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter as well. So you can follow me at Natalie21449375. And if you want to know more about our school, which is the most important thing, we are at North Warsaw. So yeah, you can find us and you can follow us on either of those and find out a little bit more about myself or the school, more importantly.
Great stuff. Right. Well, an absolute pleasure to speak to you both. And this has been one of the most enthusing podcasts that I've done. And I've done a lot because I feel like, you know, it's been a proper conversation today where we've been able to kind of fire ideas both ways. So thank you for your time and a public apology for it taking so long to get around to it as well.
No. Worth the wait, Phil. Worth the wait.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been great.
Miller's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Miller's Netter, just talking to teachers.